Hello and welcome to another edition of Weapons and Warfare for Straight Arrow News. I'm your host, Ryan Robertson. For every generation, there are certain dates that, for one reason or another, become touchstones for a moment in time. Think the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, Armistice Day, 1918, the end of World War I, December 7th, 1941. FDR called it
a date which will live in infamy.
The attack on Pearl Harbor and America's entrance into World War II, September 11th, 2001, the deadliest terrorist attacks on American soil. In 2023, October 7th joined that list. On that day, Hamas led the first invasion of Israeli territory since the 1948 Arab-Israeli War. In the attack, 1,139 people were killed and about 250 civilians and soldiers were taken hostage, sparking a war that has worldwide implications. A little more than a week ago, I had the chance to talk with one of the first Israeli soldiers to respond to the October 7th attacks, and we're devoting this entire episode of the show to his story. It's harrowing, gut-wrenching, and will probably make some of you feel uncomfortable. For his safety, and in accordance with the IDF policy, we're hiding his face and only identifying him as Major Govreen. Major Govreen, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time. Obviously, with the time difference between the U.S. and Israel, that was a factor to deal with. So it's later there in Israel. You're probably getting ready to go to bed shortly. So thank you for staying up. But I want to begin our conversation, Major, with October 6th. There's a lot of folks in the world who seem to forget that there was a ceasefire in place between Israel and Hamas and Hezbollah to a certain degree on October 6th. Yeah. So take me back to that day, Major. Obviously, officer in the IDF, but what was a normal day like for you prior to the terrorist attacks?
So I was a company commander in a Givati brigade in the days of October 6th. Our days were completely different in aspect of, I would say, now we are in a year and a half of war, that it's kind of different than our usual tasks. So if we talk about specifically about the southern border, it was kind of peaceful. I remember myself taking my own soldiers to kindergarten next to the Gaza envelope to show them who are the ones they are protecting. But in normal days, at least for the last years, it's been quite quiet over there. You can see the difference when you look in 2022 about the last time that the conflict got heated. It finished only with rocket firing from the Gaza to Israel, but it wasn't no maneuver. In the end, it's important to understand that it wasn't any maneuver of Israeli or the IDF since 2014, 10 years from now. So this is the reality. The Israeli reality is kind of unique. People are very Western here, living their own life, going to their own jobs, looking for vacation once or twice a year with their families. And this is the thing they are interested in. I think this is why also October 7 was such a surprise in that manner, because we all know that there have been an enemy in the other side of the fence. But we just regular to this kind of quiet and regular life, and we want to believe that we can just continue what we are doing now. We could live as normal countries in Europe or in the US.
So then October 7th comes. Obviously, the day maybe started as any other would have, but walk me back, and obviously you commanded troops. Walk me back to October 7th.
where were you? What were you doing? And then I know a little bit about your story and how you responded, but if you can share what you did on October 7th.
Of course. So in that day, my company was on a leave. We've been on a week vacation after 4 months of hard training. Me especially, I've been in a vacation in a hotel near the Sea of Galilee with my partner. We've just been there for 3 days, and just the day after, I should take my stuff and go back to my company in the north. We woke up at 6:30 from the alerts of our phones, that just the news notification that something has happened. From time to time in Israel, you can see that there is rocket shooting, but this time it seems very odd because it was for a long time and there was no direct answer or explanation from the media or from the IDF for this. So the first thing that I did was to call to my deputy's commander and told them to get our soldiers ready for orders to meet, told them to get to our base being in the north, not in the south at that time, and took their gear and be ready for any orders to go south. Nobody was really answering me in the chain of the command. And in that moment, I just decided for myself to go to see what is going on in the south. I accomplished to get with me two of my partner company commanders in my battalions. I was just with my personal weapon. My friend was just with his pistol, and other company commander only with his weapon as well. And we went down south until we got near to the city of Sderot. This was already in the time of 9 a.m. Still, nobody knows really what he's doing, just intuition. And actually of way that I've been, I would say, educated in my time in the Tactical Command College of the IDF. When you don't know what you really need to do, you just need to go up front and see it by yourself. So this is just what we do. When we got there, we got a command to go back north with our troops and wait for orders. But for me, it seems wrong. They give us these orders because this is like the procedure and it's actually kind of okay. But to me, something in that day seems off. And I asked for my company, other company commanders to stay with me just for five more minutes that we could enter the city and we will see by ourselves. If something is off, we can know an alert. And if not, we can go back north. It didn't.
So I just want to recap for folks who might be listening. October 7th, you get a alert on your phone early in the morning. You try to get in touch with your commanding officers, no response. You tell your guys, get ready to go, meet up at the base, but you're just not feeling, something's off. So you decide on your own intuition to grab your pistol, get with a couple of your other company commanders and head south.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
After this, we just entered the city of Sderot and we travel only with our own vehicles, like private vehicles. It didn't even been 5 minutes after we entered in that we saw the first Hamas terrorist in the city shot dead. I just charged my weapon, told my friend, I told you so, and we just enter in. 5 minutes later, we already got shot near the trail of Sderot, and we are in the middle of a combat until we kill one of the Hamas terrorists in that area. In that time, I'm getting a phone call from our brigade commander that already been in Sderot as well and got from his own mind the command of the city of Sderot. and we start to try give things a different order to bring more troops in the city. But after, I think it was an hour when we are fighting, he just grabbed me and tell me, Major, the real event is in the Gaza envelope. Take everybody you know over there. Because the road is also in the Gaza envelope, but there is kibbutzim and other settlements that are more close to the border. And in that time, I just grabbed two of my friends. We going and see other troops getting arranged. Everything seems for them normal.
Have you been able to, at this point, have you been able to gear up more than just your pistol? I mean, do you...
in that moment, no. But afterwards, when we got to our first settlement, we actually wanted to go to the Re'im parking lot. We didn't know that back then, but this was the place that the Nova Festival was happening. And this was the place that we wanted to go. But just before the Re'im parking lot, there is the Re'im settlement. And when we turned right in Re'im junction, I just saw the most horrific sight that I ever seen. Just burned bodies, burned vehicles all over the place, and completely silenced from that settlement. And I remember how I asked my friend, there is nobody here. And in a decision of a moment, we just took our vehicle, turned right into the settlement, and got in, and I just pulled the car, got out, and immediately got shot into the vehicle. All my vehicle was shotted with bullets. I just put myself on the floor and start crawling until we see other troops in the settlement and we get over there. Over there, I knew some people that already worked there, soldiers, and I just went to the doctor office in that settlement when a lot of injured being over there. I just took from the dead and the injured their own weapon, their own gear, and armed myself up, and we start fighting. And this was a crucial moment from the settlement, because from that moment, we became from defense to offense in that settlement. And we go from house to house, just enter in, open it with fire. But I think after 2 hours, I heard screaming from one of the rooms. There was civilians over there. I yelled to them that we are from the IDF. In the beginning, they didn't believe us. But afterwards, I remember how they slowly opened the door. And I remember, I think, 30-year-old lady holding her own baby. And when she see me, she just cried and give me her baby and fell on the floor. She was so much in tension in that moment, so scared. And in the moment she saw us, something just felt more comfortable and she just fell apart. Of course, we took her baby, we took her out of that kibbutz, and we keep fighting until the moment that my deputy told me that they are in Gaza envelope with my own company. In that time, when I fighting, my own deputies just making the company with their own gear and starting move south. And then that was the moment that I moved to kibbutz Kfar Aza. In Kfar Aza, I got my own company back. I got a major part of Kfar Gaza settlement. And that was really a part that we start fighting in a way that I could be the company commander, and I have almost 100 soldiers by my side, and we could start maneuver into the kibbutzim. It was quite difficult. We need to have a certain different arrangement because it's completely different from everything we ever practice. You practice to fight against the enemy in his own territory, but now you are fighting against the enemy in your own territory, for your own citizens inside their homes. So you might need to be much more careful. When you get into a house, you cannot just shoot everywhere, because you need to keep the citizens safe. And this was a procedure. They took us 3 days until we could announce there is no terrorist inside Israel. There is no terrorist inside the kibbutz.
Because it just took that much time to clear every room, every nook and cranny of every kibbutz.
Definitely, because part of them was hiding. Part of them wasn't wearing any uniforms. So it was very hard. You just can walk from place to place. Then somebody shoots at you. So you need to go step by step, house by house, sometimes couple of times, until you can say that all the kibbutz is clear. And afterwards, you need also to look at the open areas. There have been a lot of open areas in that time. We have a lot of encounters with the enemy in that time. Unfortunately, our battalion got two casualties in face-to-face battles against the enemy. But luckily, we would manage to save my company at least 150 people from their houses. It's a different kind of feeling. And in the moment that we got out from the kibbutz, we were already being starting to training for our maneuver inside Gaza Strip.
Obviously, we're going to talk about the maneuvers inside Gaza, but I want to unpack some things.
Yeah.
When you were in the kibbutz and you met the mother who, you know, handed you the baby, and just the raw emotion that she must have been feeling, I can't imagine all of the different emotions that were going through her mind. But for you going through, have you had a chance? I mean, it's been over a year now, but have you really had a chance yourself to process what you and your men meant to her and her baby in that moment?
Yeah, actually I have the time, and I actually even met with her, I think 3 months ago. She would manage to know who I am, and she just tried to meet with me, and we have a kind of interesting emotional meeting at that time. It felt awful, you know, for me as an IDF officer, as a commander. My only mission is to keep Israel population and the Israeli people safe. In that time, you see things that didn't happen to the Jewish people since the Holocaust, and you see it by your own eyes, and you can't really believe how we got to this point. But I think in that moment, I have a short feeling of, I don't believe that this is what happened, but you don't really have the time to think in that moment. Just need to act and act and act again. But yeah, I think it was the most heartbreaking moment that I ever had, to see it, this woman breaking with her baby like this. And my mission, other IDF officer mission, that this thing will never happen again. So yeah, but of course it gave me especially a lot of motivation to fight the just war of Israel.
So October 7th became October 8th, became, you know, the last year and a few months. You talked about your company's or your brigade's maneuvers within Gaza. The training for that, how much training? You said a few days of training and then the maneuver started. Kind of walk us through that timeline.
Yeah, so this was actually, I think, the most complicated time for me, because when you are fighting in the 7th of October, you just need to act. When you're fighting inside Gaza, it's almost the same thing. You're already in that moment. But that time between, that you don't really know what is going to happen, this was the hard time for me especially. But because I know that my company is already well trained, I thought that I just need to sharp the sword a little better. And I thought to myself, how could I do it? And when we got prepared to the maneuver inside Gaza, we already got the images of the buildings that we are going to conquer. And I just saw that their building are just huge. Huge building, multi-store buildings. And I thought to myself that a lot of the equipment and the places that we are training in are not very like this place. So I tried to give another solution to that manner, and I found one. I just called for a big building company in Beersheba, and I asked them if I can train in their own building, multi-store building of 12-store or 15-store, and they accepted this. And this was the place that we train most of the time. Of course, we just got ready in our equipment. And another thing is to keep the morale high in the soldiers, because I think, especially in Israel, this is so important. The way that the soldiers believe that they can accomplish the mission, that they believe in what they are doing. So this was the main thing in my mind. Keep your company trained and keep the morale high and things will go well. And I think it really went that way.
And I got to imagine, I mean, just the response you got from the building owner to make use of their building for training, there was probably a lot of just national, and obviously the IDF, everybody in Israel has to serve in the IDF, but just the national response must have been overwhelming of like, whatever it takes, whatever we need to do.
It was amazing. I can say that people all over just left their own disagreements and just raised themselves to join this process. People got volunteer for the kibbutzim in the Gaza envelope to rebuild them. People just went to give soldiers more equipment, more food, anything they thought that they will need. So everybody was very thrilled just to help the IDF complete this mission. So of course the response was very good. Do whatever you want. My building, it's not interesting right now. Right now, everything that's interesting that you will accomplish your mission, and we could manage and accomplish the war goals. And people acting that way, it was heartwarming, actually.
So then the company goes into Gaza. Obviously, probably lots of contact in Gaza. It didn't take long, really, for the fighting to switch to tunnel. I mean, obviously, there's everything on the surface, but the system of tunnels, Israel knew about the tunnels in Gaza. But the complexity and the number of tunnels, was that surprising once you stepped over?
I would say it was surprising, the amount of that. But we actually, one of the most important things that you're already learning in the military academy, that there is always learning inside of war. You are always learning. You are always adapting. And this is the same thing that we did in this war. We just understood, okay, what the tunnels mean in the way that the enemy is using them to get an advantage against us. And then we understood that we can use the same way, use it as advantage as his own disadvantage. So we ambushed this tunnels, and we found them, and we used special equipment to destroy them with their own terrorists inside them. So after we understood it, that they are not really fighting us, they are in the few first day, they were really fighting us in the way that I would say a defense military is defending against offense military. But afterwards, it became very fast to guerrilla warfare that they are using until now. And there is special way to work against guerrilla. You need to use ambush. You need to use to conquer a big part of the place. You need to understand where the tunnels start and you need to find a way to destroy them. And when you do it step by step, meter after meter, you find a way to destroy the enemy encounter and found a way to make him surrender.
The entrances for the tunnels all over the place. There's, you know, the critics are going to say that Israel, you know, the IDF painted some of the signs up around the entrances, but obviously they're in schools, they're in daycares, they're in hospitals, UN facilities, the weapons caches in all of those places as well.
Yeah.
What was the most egregious thing that you saw while you were, you know, fighting and investigating all of the things that you discovered?
Well, first thing that I think that your viewers or listeners need to know, that in any house inside Gaza that I've been with was full of weapon or interest to tunnels. Also in kid bedrooms, other kids' beds. I have personally pictures from a little girl bedroom painted with terrorist images on their walls, and underneath their bed, full equipment for terrorists to work there. So this is in every house. And Ryan, I will tell you another thing. When we conquered one of the terror base, former school, but a new terror base of Hamas, I went to the library to see what the kids of Gaza are learning in the school. And I opened a book that called The Crying Mosque. The Crying Mosque is a children book that talk about the poor Al-Aqsa Mosque of in Jerusalem that been kidnapped by the Jews. And the mission of the Palestinian kids and the Arab kids around the world in that book was to bring it back from the Jews. How they are going to do this? And you can see in that book, picture of small children, of course, animated with knives, with guns, with rockets, just entering into the image of the map of Israel. And this is how they treated and educate their own children. And this is what you are seeing in any house inside the Gaza Strip. And you can see it everywhere. I was...
Major, I wanted not to interrupt you real quick, but at the very beginning of this conversation, you said you used to take soldiers near the... and show them the kindergarten that was near the Gaza envelope to show the IDF soldiers what it is that they're protecting. And now you're describing a situation where a kid probably of the same age as the kindergarten that you were showing to protect in that kid's room is all the things that teaching that child, all the things that you guys are protecting against.
Yeah.
How do you, you know, in Western media, in Western society, there's obviously it's politicized, right? It's polarized. But how do you explain something like that to somebody who says Israel was wrong?
Well, I think its answer is own question. How can you defend yourself against people that just brainwash their own children against Jews? And it's not against Israelis. This is the important thing. You can see Jews all over in that books. And when you understand this, you see that we cannot have any agreement after we just need to stop this kind of brainwashing and false education. In Israel, we educate our kids to live their own life, to live peacefully, to be care about each other. And I think that the one that criticizes Israel need to be the one that criticizes the Palestinian authorities and tell them to educate their kids in the way that Israel teach their own, to live in a peaceful way, live by the Western values. And when this is going to happen, we will probably see a different kind of conflict and different kind of conversation in that manner.
All right, let's leave the political side to the politicians, and let's get back to the operations on the ground in Gaza. You were in the tunnels, and you were injured during your operations. What can you say? What can you speak to that? And what are you allowed to say in regards to that operation?
It was in a specific neighborhood inside Gaza. We have a big operation in that neighborhood that was full of terrorists of Hamas. One of our mission was to get a different brigade into a battle. And when I just conquered one of the buildings, and afterwards we got shot from a different building in the area. I just, as a company commander, I like to be in the front to see the way that the battle is evolving, to understand what better options that I have. In the beginning, we have a lot of APCs, so I just took two of my APCs to start shooting in that building. But because the two terrorists probably been on the rooftop, it didn't really manage. So I just took two of my soldiers up to the roof, and we start shooting on direct fire with grenade and different weapons that we have to this building. We got in crossfire, and in that moment, I just got sharp nail into my eyes underneath my eye protector. I just kind of flew on my back. And in the beginning, I just thought that I got some, you know, a hard punch, but my eye was already almost dropped out of my face. The doctor told me that I need to go immediately to emergency. And at the beginning, I didn't really want to. I thought that I could manage well, but then I saw everything and I understood that I have no really other options. I told my deputy that he need to take in charge, give missions to my other platoon commanders, and I actually told them that I'm going to get back quite soon. This is what I thought in that time. And then I just enter very quickly with an helicopter to the hospital. Got quite a long of 10 hours operation on my eye. And in the end, I just lost the vision in my right eye. I actually got the opportunity to keep it like my own eye, but it isn't working. It's not seeing anything. So this is a little bit about that. We have injuries, of course, because this is war, in our troop, and of course of casualties. But I think in that manner that the spirit of the IDF people, officers, soldiers are very high, and people are very emotionally want to take part of this just war.
That injury changed your role a little bit. Was that the last time that you commanded troops in the field?
Yeah, unfortunately, afterward, I thought I could manage to get back to the field, but the doctors kind of told me, you need to wait. Now I'm the head of Foreign Affairs of the Israel National Defense College. It's the highest institution that develop leaders, high-rank leaders in the IDF, government agencies, under ministries, and I really responsible now of their of their learning part. I would say that for me, learning was a lifesaver in the war. So I think it's very important mission to me to help other senior officers to educate themselves, to be ready to other challenges that our country going to have. We have been in a very difficult situation, and one of the way that I managed to use the platform of my military education was to develop a new tactic that is now been learning also in the company commander course that called, I'll try to pronounce this in the English, but it's called a multi-structure conquer with small forces. And it was kind of a life-saving in that manner that we need to conquer of 12, 15 buildings, 15 floor buildings, and that we are didn't really been operate or taught how to do it. And I developed it actually from a term paper that I have on a very famous, actually, German general in World War I. So for me, education, military education, been a lifesaver, and I'm being very, very enthusiastic to help others to accomplish this as well.
Something that we had talked about, and I'm not sure when exactly this interview, this story will publish, but right now, as I'm talking to you, last night, well, today is the first day of Hanukkah. The second day starts tonight. I imagine you'll be lighting the Hanukkah menorah shortly. Maybe you have already. You had mentioned, you know, some of the significant factors that make the Hanukkah story important. You saw some parallels. Kind of walk me through those instances.
Yeah, so Hanukkah is very important holiday and tradition in Israel. For me, it's been also kind of a way that I learn military operations, because the Hanukkah process, it's all about the Maccabees win against the Slavic or Greek in that time, Hellenist empire that just gave strict rules against Judaism and against the existence of Jews. It was Antiochus that gave that rules. And the Jewish minority just understand that it's not going to live its life not by its Jewish way. And even though it was a minority and this Greek empire was a huge empire with a huge military, they understand that they are going to fight until the last drop of effort, until the last drop of blood. And this is the way that we look over Hanukkah. And I think it's also the way that Israel see it itself. You know, you talk earlier about how the world see us. So sometimes the world can see us as the big Israel that go against the small, maybe Palestinians. But the reality, it's not really like this. It's the small Israel that fight against radical Islam all over. If it's Hezbollah in the north, if it's Hamas in the south, if it's against the Houthis in Yemen, if it's against Iran. And this spirit of the Maccabees, it's the spirit of Israel that fight a war until the last drop of blood, until the last drop of effort for our ancestors and also for our future. So this is the way that Hanukkah work in Israel. This is the way we see it, and this is how it's so important for our own image and our own future.
Major, I want to thank you for your time today. I want to thank you for sharing your story with us. Before I let you go, is there anything else that you want our audience to know about the current conflict, the way it was conducted, the way things are shaping up now? Is there anything else that you'd like to share?
I think, and I tried to give a little example from that story of the Maccabees, that people need to realize that Israel is a Western democracy that fight for a life in a very tough neighborhood. People around here would really like not to go to the military, die in war, and just live a normal life. And I think in that aspect, we need to understand that we are Israel fighting the Western civilization war against radical Islam and again, radical forces. And if you understand that, you need to support Israel, and you need to understand that if this fight wouldn't end in Israel, it would end in Europe land or in the US land, and you don't want it. So this is the way and the time to march forces, the Western civilization, against radical Islam. And this is, I think, my final saying to that lovely audience. Thank you so much for having me.
That's going to do it for us this week on Weapons and Warfare. I want to thank the Major one more time for his time and the IDF's public affairs officers who helped make the interview happen. October 7th was the single deadliest day for the Jewish people since the Holocaust. The violence and bloodshed will stain the memories for generations. And while I know there is a lot of disagreement in the international community on the way Israel handled the war since the attack, I hope there's agreement that the acts of valor carried out by soldiers like Major Govreen are also remembered, that their stories of courage, sacrifice, and loss will inspire future generations to stand up for what is right, to push back the darkness, and defend the light. As always, please like and subscribe to our social media feeds and share our stories with your friends. For senior producer Brett Baker, video editor Brian Spencer, and graphics artist Dakota Patillo, I'm Ryan Robertson with Straight Arrow News, signing off.